Welcome to Energy Matters, where we explore alternative health in the Pioneer Valley. I'm your host, Caroline Rutterman, and I'm a Reiki professional and intuitive in Northampton, Massachusetts. For the past 9 years, I've been teaching people how to use their intuition and helping them reduce stress and anxiety. Together, we'll talk with other practitioners and learn how they bring health and healing to the Pioneer Valley. Let's do this. Hey, welcome, welcome, everyone. You are listening to Energy Matters, and I am your host, Caroline Rutterman. And today, we are interviewing Hannah Corbett, who is an author, an artist, and she just came out with this new book called Lunar Flower Priestess, Ritual Magic and Healing Wisdom for the Sacred Feminine Spirit. Welcome, Hannah.
Hi, thanks for having me, Caroline.
Of course, of course. So let's dive right in. Your book, Lunar Flower Priestess, just came out this past year, and you self-published. And you, in this book you write, lunar consciousness is the foundation of magical life. What is magical life?
For me and my family, like it's being very connected to natural rhythms, whether the moon or the earth or the seasons, and then sort of timing your ritual practice based on those natural clockworks in nature.
So natural rhythms, which kind of natural rhythms do you talk about? Do you tend to revolve these rituals around?
Really all the main ones that you think about and notice from childhood on, like the lunar cycle. So that would be like the smaller, more frequent rituals, and then the larger cycles. So the seasonal or the midpoints of the season. So the solstices and the equinoxes, and then the middle point between each of those events are in a pagan calendar important dates to do different practices.
Cool. Yeah. What made you want to bring your grimoire into from the private space into the public? What was that? What was that little nudge?
Yeah. So I, as you said, I'm an artist, and that's been a big part of my identity my whole life. And I definitely didn't think of myself as a writer. And I started seeing a healer about 5 years ago, and she kept telling me that my guides wanted me to write, and I was open to it, but I didn't know what they were talking about, so I just kind of left it alone. And in reality, I do write a lot. I write every morning, like just as a mind-clearing, emotion-clearing practice, and I keep a lot of little journals of compendium type information, like and then after a few years of working with this teacher and her telling me the same thing over and over again, I one day just looked at my bookshelf with all these little compendiums on it and said, oh, wait a second, I think that is a book, that the stuff that I've collected, because it's important information to me, it's important information for other people too. So what if I put this all together and make my Book of Shadows a grimoire that other people can reference and be a part of their library.
That's really powerful to all of a sudden just see all this collection of work that you've done and just be like, wait a second.
Yeah. It took me like years and years and years to compile all these little tidbits about this goddess and that herb. And, you know, so I'd had these things organized in this way. And then I was like, oh, I'll just throw it all together and see what happens.
It's just like a cookbook. It's just the years and years of recipes that you've created. And you do have some great kind of almost like bath recipes there. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that because I was really, really loving it as I was reading it. And, you know, you can really tell as a reader the joy of writing.
Yes.
Because it as you're reading it, there's a natural flow to your writing from section to section, and it just has an ease and a comfort about being in the book as a reader. And I could really tell that you were in the zone when you were writing.
Yeah, that's great to hear. I love that. Yep.
So let's talk a little bit about the lunar consciousness, because you talked about sort of this magical life being in rhythm with the natural cycles. So when you're talking about being in touch with the lunar cycles, and this kind of lunar consciousness. Can you tell us more about what is lunar consciousness?
You can go very far with this. You can get very detailed, or you can be really granular. And either way, you can have a very rich practice. So, like, if you're starting out, the main thing to think about is that when you have a full moon and then the following 2 weeks of waning, that's when you want to use the energy of the moon to help you let go of things in your life. And then the opposite, the new moon and the waxing following that is the 2 weeks that you use to manifest and attract things into your life. So just using the push and pull of the moon and just using that simple two-week structure, you can have a very powerful ritual practice just within that. And then you can get more granular and more detailed about all the little stations that the moon is going through while she's doing her transits. But just for a beginner, just going, okay, it's a full moon and now it's going to be waxing, so I can use that energy to let go of all the stuff that I need to clear out if I'm going to bring stuff in to manifest, because you have to create room first. And so that, I think that's one of the biggest lessons of the moon, is like, first you have to make the room before you can ask something else into your life. You have to create space for it.
Okay, so we just covered a lot. So if you guys are listening and you're like, all right, let's break that down a little bit more, because we talked about both cycles of the moon, the new and the full moon, the waxing and the waning, manifestation as part of that clearing and bringing stuff back in. So let's flesh that out a little bit, okay. Because there's a lot in there, and I am very much with you, but I want to make sure that people can really understand, because this is what you describe as the foundation of having a magical life. So this is the foundation of what you do.
Yeah. So I just had a thought while you were saying that. So interesting to think about time at this time of year, when we're at the end and the beginning of a new Gregorian calendar year. So I don't think the Gregorian calendar time is real, and I don't think it makes sense in any way compared to all the natural clockworks we're talking about.
Absolutely.
I mean, of course, I have to sync my life with it. Otherwise, I can't sync with other people. It's just what we've chosen to use as our timekeeping system. But to me, the time that is kept by the moon is much more real, and I feel much more connected with nature when I'm really paying attention to the time the moon is keeping and what the moon is doing at any given moment. And I feel very comforted just sort of knowing what the moon is doing, like this week, today, you know what I mean, kind of thing. So there's just that basic level of lunar consciousness bringing you home to yourself, in a sense, into your natural place in the cosmic dance of all these celestial bodies moving around and keeping time. Yeah, so that's, I just sort of added that. I don't know if I answered the question, but
it does. It's kind of, I mean, it gives me a deeper insight to the importance of that calendar, of that time. You know, that's the moon is your clock.
Yes. Yeah.
So do you also keep a lunar calendar? Mm-hmm. Like if anyone knows what I'm talking about, it's basically a large, you know, it looks like a poster. And it has every month, it has the cycle of the moon. So you can see according to the number, the calendar day, at what point the moon is a full moon or a new moon, or at what point in the cycle, just by looking at the calendar day. And so it's actually a beautiful grid. Mm-hmm. And you can kind of see how it's a beautiful pattern, even just if you're looking at it.
Yeah.
Is that kind of your...
I highly recommend having one of those on your wall just to watch what the moon is doing. And then if you menstruate, then you can also sync your cycle to the moon cycle and use that calendar to know exactly when you'll be ovulating and menstruating, and or you'll know if you're early or you're late, or you know, it's another great tool to sort of get centered and sync with the moon that way.
And do you find that when you start using those calendars and tracking your cycle mm-hmm. with the moon, that you tend to line up? Does your mm-hmm. menstrual cycle tend to line up with that?
Yeah, it makes a really beautiful visual pattern on the calendar itself.
Mm.
And I've done that for years and years and years, so I can put them all next to each other and see that I have this very constant pattern to my cycle within the time of the moon.
That's really, really cool.
It is really cool. It's very empowering. So I highly recommend it to anybody who wants to look at that.
Could women use that, the moon calendar, as well for knowing when they're ovulating?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, as long as you're regular within your whatever is regular to you. So if that's a 28-day cycle, you'll know, you know, you'll be able to see where your ovulation is too.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of different ways that we can kind of use the moon as our system. Mm-hmm. If we tend to run late or not, yeah. I guess that's not exactly the right example of running late, because that's still fits into a different paradigm. But, so it's kind of bringing our bodies in line with these, mm-hmm. with these natural cycles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's bring it down to the mechanics of the lunar consciousness, kind of exploring a little bit more. You were talking about in terms of manifesting, bringing something into our lives that we want to, you know, have more of, or something that we are ready to let go of. Can you tell us a little bit more about what the waxing moon means and what the waning moon means?
Yeah. So when it's waning, it just appears to be getting smaller in the sky. And when it's waxing, it appears to be getting bigger. So that's why we use the waning to let go of something, because it's basically the moon is getting smaller every day and going to a black void of nothingness. So if we use that energy to, let's say it's on the full moon, I know I want to let go of something, maybe a habit or a thought pattern or a fear I've been holding on to, or I want to lose 5 pounds, or, I mean, it could be, you know, mundane or really big and important and spiritual, but it could be anything. So you set your intention on that full moon day and maybe do a little ritual, maybe a little fire ritual, because you're letting go and you're making something into nothing. And then you could plant it in the earth on that full moon day, and then you give it to the moon for the next 2 weeks, and you just say, I'm giving this up to you, like, help me let go of this thing. And then the idea is that now you've let go of something, you've created some new space in your life, now you're ready to manifest or attract something. So then on the new moon, you plant the seeds of that, another little ritual where you identify your intention of what you want to be attracting into your life. And then over the next 2 weeks of waxing, during that time that the moon is getting bigger, then you're pulling that towards you.
Hmm.
And if you think about the way the moon acts on our bodies, or the ocean tide, or on our pineal glands, or on mollusks, there is this pushing and pulling and getting bigger and getting smaller. And even with our wombs, with our cycles, you know, you can sort of see how the moon has this influence on us and on our world, and that it can be harnessed.
And I like that idea of harnessing those natural cycles. And because, you know, I think that when people think about, you know, women on their periods, at least in sort of the larger cultural thing, it's like, like this woman's on her period, like she's just uncontrollable emotions. And there's sort of this, you know, like, oh, that's gross, or this is a really painful time. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of, I think, especially, you know, whether it's through how we use our, you know, menstrual products with tampons. And I mean, there's just so much wrapped up in how we view the period and the menstrual cycle. So much wrapped up into it. And it's really, I think that it's really refreshing to be able to think of it as a time that we're aligning with nature, mm-hmm. instead of curled up into a ball.
Right.
Or, you know, having to take some kind of pain medicine to, like, you know, numb ourselves from, you know, that discomfort.
Yeah, I make that point in my book that we, from a young age, are taught to think of menstruation almost like a disease, like something you're supposed to be taking pills for. And it's like, whoa, what if we had a totally different way of thinking about this? That this could be a time where we feel things in a certain way, and that we get really in touch with our bodies, and we celebrate all the hard work they're doing at that time. And instead of pushing against it and always trying to override it, and what if we did the exact opposite of that? And how much would our experience change? Like the pain that we expect, and et cetera, the disease that we expect, you know.
How has that experience shifted? Has that experience shifted for you since you've been doing this work? Or have you kind of always been doing this work?
No. This was an important healing crisis for me, for sure. And I was raised by a woman who's very into herbs and doing everything the natural way. And I think I was rebelling against her. like, she wanted to have a party to celebrate my getting my period when I was young, and I was not into that.
You're like, no thanks, Mom.
Yeah, I was like, that is not okay. you know, she wanted to have all her friends over, and I don't know. But yeah, no, I definitely fell into the commercial way of viewing menstruation, and I definitely thought it was something you were supposed to take pills for, and that pain was normal and all of that. And I took that pretty far, and then did that to a point where it didn't work anymore. You know, the taking painkillers with every period and using tampons and wearing uncomfortable clothes and working and socializing. Like, now I make my whole calendar according to like when I'm going to be menstruating. And
cool.
At that time, I don't really plan anything except for maybe walking in the woods or, you know, stuff like that.
So how does this kind of way of aligning with the lunar consciousness and the lunar cycle, how has that impacted how you have your periods now?
Hugely. And I think
how you experience them, I should say.
Yeah. Well, I really enjoy menstruating at this point. And I've stopped feeling bad about arranging my calendar around this. I feel it's super important for me to just be home when that's happening.
And you know, it's funny too. I feel like when we start prioritizing these things, even if at first it seems odd to other people, they get used to it very quickly. Mm-hmm. And they're like, no, that's just what she does.
Yeah. You and know? If it's normal for you, maybe it could be normal for them too someday. So you're planting little seeds of like how it could be. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely went from having a huge amount of pain, so much pain, to now I haven't had a painful period in probably 6 or 7 years.
Whoa.
And I mean, not one menstrual cramp.
Two thumbs up.
Yeah. So I made some big changes, not just the way I was thinking about it, but I like stopped wearing tampons, period. I think that's a big one. Some women, they just do that one thing and they're all of a sudden pain free, you know?
Yeah.
I did that, and I did a 3-month course with dandelion root,
okay,
which is really good for the liver, which controls all our hormones. So if we can take really good care of our liver, then sometimes that can make a big impact on hormonal cramping.
What was the dandelion course that you did for yourself during that time?
I made a pot of tea every day, and I would let it steep overnight, and then I would drink the whole pot throughout the day. So maybe like 4 cups a day.
Okay.
For 3 or 4 months.
Wow.
And I took like 2 days off a week, but I did it 5 days a week.
Okay.
For 3 or 4 months.
So you did like a massive liver cleanse.
It
using
was a
dandelion
whole
root.
Pound of dandelion.
That's
root.
A lot.
Yeah.
That's where you did you dig it up and harvest it yourself? Or did you?
It was so much that I had to order some.
You're like, I'm not going to take over my kitchen.
Yeah.
So you were dealing with an immense amount of pain. And what was the switch for you? How did that, did you have like one of those
absolutely.
Eureka moments?
I had gotten in the habit in the first 2 days of my period, I would expect to have such bad cramps that I would take extra strength Tylenol or Advil all day for the first 2 days.
Wow.
So maybe like 16 pills total.
My goodness.
And I was doing that, and it, like I said, it was kind of was working, but not wonderfully.
That will also affect your liver.
Absolutely. And then I couldn't keep those pain pills down anymore. I just started vomiting that. So wow. I was like, okay, well, this doesn't work anymore. I need to find a different way to do this. And instantly the vomiting ceased. And then once I had finished the course with the dandelion, like I haven't had a cramp since then. So
that's super cool.
Yeah.
That's the lunar consciousness. Yeah. That's bringing it back to our natural rhythms.
Yeah. And plant consciousness and allying with plants and,
yes,
you know, believing that they can help us and letting them do what they do.
Absolutely. And we are here today with Hannah Corbett, who is the author of Lunar Flower Priestess, who is an artist, a healer, and an author. You are officially an author as of last year. So congratulations for the new book. And I just, you know, if anyone out there is looking to get their witchy sisters a book, this is a fabulous, fabulous title. You know, it's so much fun to read. There's so many great meditations in here, and I'm kind of a meditation nerd, so there's a lot of really cool meditations that I had never even thought about. And before the break, we started talking about the plant consciousness, and there was a really sweet meditation about meditating with the patterns of plants. And one of my favorite things to do when I'm hiking is to just, I mean, I love taking photos so I can kind of come back and paint and draw and kind of look at those patterns. But that is one of the things that when I'm out in nature, that just very strongly resonated with me, because I just was like, yes, like meditation on the patterns. Yeah. So thank you for including that in your book.
Yes.
So, you know, this really has a ton of very, very cool kind of really, really interesting things to kind of get your mind thinking in a different way. And like you said, this is sort of a collection of years and years worth of your own thoughts and practices and kind of explorations. So where can people get the Lunar Flower Priestess book? Like where can we find this?
Well, here in Northampton at BookLink, they should have it, or they'll be able to get it if they've just run out. And on Amazon.com is for everybody around. If they can't get downtown, they always have it. And then some other little stores around the country, but locally at BookLink.
Okay, cool. Very, very cool. So you said that some of these traditions were passed down in your family. You kind of talked about your mom really kind of embracing and wanting to bring you into the party when you had your first period. What kind of traditions did this bring down? Like, what kind of traditions within this world were brought down through your family?
Okay. Well, my mom she's an amazing gardener. She's an herbalist. She's a shiatsu therapist. She's a nurse. So she has this earthy, earth mother healer side of her. And then my dad gets into more of the esoteric stuff. Like, he got me started with tarot when I was a teenager. And in his family, there's a lineage of dowsing. So people who find water with willow branches, and that is something that my great-great-grandmother knew, and she would teach everyone in the family. So my dad and my uncle both have that. And it's also
really
a sensitivity
cool.
to, like, any kind of thing that's going on in the earth. Like, if you're in somewhere that there's earthquakes, my dad will feel that kind of thing. So there's these earth sensitivities that I get from his side, and he's sort of into anything occult and mysterious and stuff like that. So my mom's more of the practical side of magic, and my dad's more the woo esoteric side of things.
He likes to just go into the right. ethers, into the cosmos.
Yes, and that describes both of them kind of perfectly in every other way as well.
So there was really no escaping any of these traditions and interests for you. That was it was built into your DNA.
Absolutely.
Yeah. How did when I was kind of reading your book and thinking about a lot of these very, very personal practices, one thought that kept popping up for me was it's such an individual practice. It's such an individual relationship that we're creating with nature. How do we sync up our partnerships and our families with some of these kind of lunar cycles? And, you know, I especially because I feel like the lunar cycles are very connected to menstruation, right? Which is, you know, for all intents and purposes within the feminine domain. Mm-hmm. So, you know, kind of bringing men into that space and how can we sync up our romantic partnerships and our families into this whole world?
Yeah. So I don't have like one answer for that, but I can just speak to the experiences that I've had. I think not having shame and secrecy around our periods. Like if you want to menstruate the old way and have a bucket of bloody rags on your bathroom floor for 7 days of every month and let the men in your family experience that and live with that, maybe that's one thing that changes them over time.
They'll get used to it.
You know? for example, so I have my very specific guides that I work with constantly, but I've been told by some very gifted psychics certain things, and one of those things is that my husband has a gnome in the spirit realm that is helping him do all the stuff that he does, and told me what to do to take care of this gnome. And I was like, okay, well, my husband's a strict Catholic. There's no way he's going to do this, so I'm going to do this. So I've been taking care of this gnome for like 5 years or longer, and I don't try to involve him in it. But I don't hide it either. I'm like, well, here's his altar and I'm putting this stuff on it. And just last week, for the first time ever, my husband made his own offering for the gnome, and he's now designing a gnome home that he's going to build for his gnome. So cute. It took 5 years and I never pushed it on him and I never asked him to participate, and I totally respect his faith, and I would never want to influence him if he doesn't want to be influenced. But I was like, wow, like he's gotten curious about this gnome. Now he wants to take care of his gnome. Now he wants to build his gnome a house. Like,
there it is.
I was just doing my thing, going along doing my thing. And now he wants to be involved in it.
That's really sweet.
Yeah. And I don't think it's taken anything away from his other faith. You know, it's just something that I gave him permission to come to and created space for him to come to it. And eventually he did.
That's really cool. That's really cool. And I think that, you know, that's kind of like what you were touching on before about this, just the exposure. And it doesn't have to be anything that you force it on anyone, but, you know, just kind of leaving that information out there and just being true to who you are. And people will either accept it or they will, you know, grow up and be rebellious teenagers and reject everything that you share with them, but that's fine. That's really interesting. Because I was kind of thinking about that. You know, I tend to, you know, attract very artistic and creative relationships in my own life. So whatever, but I also realize that there are people who are not fully, you know, immersed in that kind of world. So just kind of glad that you kind of shared that a little bit.
Yeah. And I think half the time people are afraid that it's against some rule and they don't want to break this rule on accident, you know, and if they can know that nothing bad is going to happen if they participate or whatever, then that's good.
I want to bring it back also to what you were talking about with the plant consciousness not too long ago. So we're just going to keep talking about sort of these witchy menstrual practices. And so one thing that I read, you know, I read your Lunar Flower Priestess, and then I also listened to a couple podcasts, so I kind of forget where I have sourced some of this information. but you were talking about how you used your menses in the garden to water, not to water, but to like basically put the nutrients from your body into the earth and with your herbs and flowers, and then bringing those herbs back into your own tea and kind of steeping from their consciousness. And I just liked that whole, I'm excited about it, so I'm stuttering, but can you tell us a little bit about what that looks like for you?
It's very exciting to have, well, the story I like to tell is when I did this first, and it was on accident, was that I was walking in nature and I was on my period and I had to pee, and I just went to the bathroom and a lot of blood came out of me and went into the earth, and I got this charge up through my legs, like a energetic surge from the earth that I felt like it was the earth thanking me for making this offering. And then I thought, like, well, how messed up is that we treat this substance as waste? We literally treat it as a waste. And what does that mean psychologically, that we feel that way about our blood that is life-giving? Literally, we create life with that stuff. And how much good can we do by sort of reversing that whole paradigm and offering our blood intentionally to the earth? And then when you take it to that level where you're giving it intentionally to plants that you are then going to partake of within your own body, and the reciprocity between the plant world and the human world, and then Mother Earth as the container for that relationship to happen, it's really beautiful to participate in that. And if that moved you, I really hope that you let yourself practice that.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say that I pee in the woods all the time. Yeah. So, you know, I can definitely give back to in that way. And I don't garden because I don't have any excuses for that. I just don't. But I will give that a try and see what that experience is like, because why not?
Yeah. It's one of those things that you don't know you're missing until you experience it, and then you realize, oh wow, how much good could this do, just in terms of reversing thought patterns or belief systems, and treating that as like a really sacred offering that you can make to your plant friends.
And that's the stuff that we plump up and that we would cushion with ovulation and with an egg, and that we would nurture for a potential baby. So if not in that direction, then let it flow somewhere else.
Yes, where it can become compost and can nourish plant babies, can become part of that goddess realm again, where it belongs. You know, that's where it's meant to go.
That's really, really neat. Yeah. So if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Energy Matters. I'm Caroline Rutterman, and we are interviewing Hannah Corbett today. We're chatting a little bit more about Lunar Flower Priestess, her new book about ritual magic and healing wisdom from the sacred feminine spirit. You said something about being not connected to our periods as being sort of this, let me back up a step here. You described it being a health hazard to not use your menstrual blood and kind of see what was going on. Can you talk a little bit about how you use your menstrual blood in this way as a medium for being aware of health?
Yeah. So there's the lunar calendar that you can use to see what your cycle is doing. And then there's actually looking at your blood, which is, I think, what you're referencing right now.
Absolutely. That, like being hands-on. You know,
like people use all these different methods of controlling their period or dealing with their period. And quite a few of those methods prevent the person from seeing what what's coming out of them or feeling it leave their body. And I do think there might be a potential health hazard in not sensually experiencing your period. I mean, with your eyes, with all of your senses, like knowing what is normal for you and when changes occur and whatever kind of methods you use to collect your blood, are they hindering or helping you see what is actually happening while it's happening? So those are all things to consider. And, you know, because I feel like things can be very trendy with menstruation, like, oh, now this is the cool thing to do. This is the environmental thing to do. This is the whatever. And it's like, there's so many things that we need to consider. And we really need to use our own criteria to decide what's the right thing for us.
And you had mentioned that you you stopped using tampons mm-hmm. quite some time ago. What do you like to use for your own kind of your own products to be aware of your menstruation, but also to kind of collect the flow?
Yeah, I use a product called Glad Rags, and they're organic cotton menstrual pads that you wash, and I get them in a pale color so you can see as much as possible, just in terms of what, you know, what you see is what you get, kind of.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So thank you for being so brave and really putting all of this stuff out there, because, you know, I know, you know, I come from the camp of being like, I'm really embarrassed about this thing, so I'm going to tell everyone. It's so important to kind of share these things that feel a little taboo mm-hmm. and that feel a little outside of the cultural norm, because it gives permission for other people to be their weirdo selves and to acknowledge that their own really private practices have some normalcy and some safety in a public space. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so first I just want to say thank you for putting this out into the world, because, you know, from reading about and kind of listening to some of your journey, this wasn't an easy process for you getting just putting this out there. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about some of the hesitations that you had or the fear that came up for you when you were starting to publish?
Yeah. I mean, definitely just some good old fashioned, like, get to the back of the broom closet kind of conditioning that I think we all have about wanting to blend in and not call attention to ourselves and be the weirdo. But really, like, I want the world to be full of those weirdos, like, letting their freak flags fly.
We're the best.
Yeah. So if we all do that for each other and just do our own little weird thing, and that was scary for me, just the it's okay to practice all this stuff, but it's not okay to talk about it kind of thing, because I think that's kind of how it the rule in my house was growing up, was like, yeah, we do a lot of weird stuff that other people would think would be weird, and it's okay to do it, but maybe don't talk about it. Maybe that's how we stay safe. But I think sometimes you have such a strong calling to talk about something, even if it is a taboo thing, that then you just have to weigh the risks of, like, what are the bad things I'm afraid are going to happen? How likely are they to happen? What if they do actually happen? How will I deal with that? And just kind of go through everything and then make your choice. Like, if I'm really feeling called to do this thing, but I think it's a little risky and a little scary, but I'm going to do it anyways because I think I can handle it even if I have to deal with those consequences. So I think if we all kind of apply that criteria to putting our weirdness into the world, half the time we'll come up with, like, yes, it's worth it. Let's be weird.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes we can kind of find those spaces of being weird that also allow us the safety mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. we crave.
Yeah.
What aspect of, I guess, you know, is there a safety in putting ourselves out there, or do we have to give that part? Do we have to kind of throw that into the wind?
Well, I think if you're going to do anything in a public way, like I'm the public person publicly speaking about this thing, then there is some inherent risk in that. But I also think the more people are talking about a particular topic, the more community is being created around that topic. And what happens when you have communities, you have safe spaces. Mm. So if it's women talking about these womanly things that don't get talked about, now we've just, between you and I, look at the space between us, we just created the space to talk about this stuff. And we can do that intentionally in bigger spaces with more people. When you do it on the radio like this, you're doing it with a lot of people. So all the listeners are part of that space now. So they've been included in this community as well. So I do think just by doing it, you are creating safe spaces for it. And I also think just by doing it, you're also taking on a little risk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How, when we're taking on this kind of risk, how can we keep ourselves grounded? What are some of your practices, whether it's through the kind of plant consciousness or the goddess consciousness or the lunar consciousness? Like how, what are some ways that we can keep ourselves grounded when we're kind of, you know, taking on these larger risks of putting ourselves out there and putting our work into the world?
Yeah. Well, I mean, when I think about women that I've seen that have taken these risks and then the way they deal with having taken those risks and getting different feedbacks, I think it's different for everybody. Like for some people, it can be just talking about the thing itself. Like, oh, this makes me so nervous and I was afraid this thing would happen and then it happened and then I went through it and then I got to the other side and now I'm doing it bigger and better, you know. Or you might see someone else go through the exact same thing and never talk about the thing, but then you notice all the other stuff they're doing to make their brand or their message or their activism like impeccable. You know what I mean? So like,
absolutely.
Depending if you attract some kind of criticism or if you attract being attention to yourself and someone thinks that you're wrong about something, or, you know, I'm just thinking about someone like you or someone like me, we are making ourselves public people and we are saying certain things. So we are attracting attention to ourselves for those things.
Yeah. So how do we create our own safety within that space? How do we kind of keep calm and keep centered within the sort of storm or what maybe feels like a storm?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like what are some like kind of rituals or practices that we can do to really keep into that, our center?
Yeah. Well, so is this person, do you feel this like on social media or do you feel this as a radio person or where does it tickle at you a little bit?
Where does it tickle at me? I think that definitely public speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do it quite a lot.
Right.
So I'm always kind of pushing those edges
between
the radio show, yeah. But then also, you know, when I'm out talking about my Reiki practice, mm-hmm. For me, that's, you know, a big part of me keeping myself grounded is I give myself so much Reiki.
So much Reiki. Yep.
I send Reiki ahead of me.
I did that for this today multiple times.
And it's always really nice.
Yep.
When it's so like.
And for the listener too, like, you know, anytime in the future that someone listens to this and it's a podcast, then they'll get some Reiki too.
So
did you guys notice that?
So you might not even realize that you're feeling really nice right now.
Yeah.
Getting some good Reiki vibes out there.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. That's really kind. That's really kind of you to. So, you know, like I think that. I was just kind of curious as to what your favorite grounding practices are,
mm-hmm.
Because I think everyone that does really deep intuitive work and healing work, whether they're doing that in a public or a private space, grounding, I think, is a huge practice for them.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to get nosy.
So
like
the woods, sitting on the earth, even, you know, or hugging a tree is super grounding. If you don't want to get down on the ground, it's not a good time of year for that. But yeah, hugging a tree is one of my favorite grounding practices. And then I think just knowing your own limits, like, oh, I've I've been pushing my limits already with the public speaking. I've done it 3 times this week. I need a little quiet time. I've grown enough that way this week. Now I can contract a little bit.
Yeah.
So I think just kind of knowing your own limits too is honoring and respecting your own boundaries and taking care of them.
Yeah. And kind of having that, you know, fullness of your own kind of moon and your own full moon and then allowing that to wane and go into darkness.
Yes.
And then come back out and rise when you're ready.
Yeah. And it'd be interesting to pay attention to how those kind of rhythms that you're talking about, how they sync with your lunar or with your moons, with your womb.
Absolutely.
Yeah, to see if there's a connection there all the time.
Yeah. So where can people find you on the interwebs? Where can people get your book? Tell us one more time.
Yeah. So my website is lunarflowerpriestess.com. The only social media I really do is Instagram, and that's at Lunar Flower Priestess. And it's easy to find my book on Amazon.com, Lunar Flower Priestess. And yeah, you can get in touch with me through the website.
That sounds fabulous. Well, thank you so much for coming on to the show today. And absolutely. Hannah Corbett, you are a very talented woman. So I hope that many people get to explore a lot of great intuitive work in here. And I'm really looking forward to having this in my own bookshelf. And I devoured it. So, you know, get this book for yourself and for your friends and go explore.
Yay.
Go explore the world in a new way.
Yeah.
And have a great evening, everyone. And we will see you